So Tom's talk was really cool. Unfortunately, I'm not going to be talking about anything as cool as that. From the sublime to the ridiculous, as they say. So I'm going to be talking about something that sucked in the future, and hopefully we're not going to have suck as much. Sucked in the past, hopefully won't suck as much in the future. First of all, standard disclaimer, this is not a Google talk. Google talk lawyers, please run screaming from the room. No Google review, etc., etc. I normally have my cloud storage picture, which is normally a mushroom cloud blowing up the world. But I've realized something. So let's see, does this work? Yes. Cloud storage, yes, is blowing up the world, but not in the way I thought. So it's not so much a mushroom cloud as these two glaciers inexorably coming together, and we're the little guy with his nut in the middle screaming. So that's, I think, a much more accurate depiction of what's going on. It's inexorable, it's happening, but it's not happening as rapidly as, you know, I worried about. So why is that? And again, you've probably seen this one before, and it's the blob store semantics. So is there anyone here who's writing new cloud scale applications or seen them or being done? Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, I work for Google, and I'm seeing them done. But blob stores don't really map. All the new applications being deployed on Azure and Amazon and Google Cloud Storage, they're all blob store apps, but there's, you know, probably millions, if not tens of millions, of applications out there that want files. They just like files. They know how to work with files. Blob stores simply don't work for them. So we still need file access protocols. And something that's quite interesting is even when organizations migrate their applications into the cloud and they're running them on cloud servers, they're running them traditional, they're running traditional apps in VMs in the cloud, and those traditional apps still want to talk file to some back-end store, even if that store is inserted in the cloud. So last year, I gave a talk about an idea of how to gateway Samba servers on-premises into cloud, life got in the way of implementing that. I still plan to do it, but other things happened, as we know. But what is actually quite interesting, I've realized, is entirely cloud-based apps. So you have applications running in the cloud on VMs, talking to shared storage in the cloud in the back end. And the only two really viable options, as you know, are NFS, V3 and 4, and SMB3. And so this being a Samba conference, obviously I prefer SMB3. And the only clients that really matter, the only clients that are ever running in the cloud, are actually Windows and Linux. macOS, I don't know anyone who's deploying macOS apps in the cloud. I'm sure Apple will get around to it eventually. But Windows really, really likes talking SMB more than NFS. So let's look at NFS and NFS v4 specifically. So, I mean, it has most of the things that we know and love from SMB. SMB3 has file and directory leases, it has namespaces, which are analogous to DFS, long-lived handles, and it's adopted the SMB ACL model, which is a disaster and everyone hates, but what can you do? It has parallel PNFS, and it's got RDMA, as Tom just pointed out. So, contrasting with SMB, we have all the clustering and transparent failover, which people do with NFS, but it's not as well defined in the protocol as it is with SMB3. We have multi-channel, SMB over RDMA, encryption, and, you know, as Tom just showed, we have somewhat rapid development. Microsoft adds stuff, everyone else follows, and the protocol moves forward in quite a fair clip. Plus, Windows clients really want to use SMB. I don't know of any decent Windows NFS client. I know Microsoft has one. Does anyone actually use that? Anyone? No? Has anyone seen it or tried it out? Okay, you've seen it, but nobody uses it. Okay, that's pretty much what I thought. So, Oh, okay. Yes. Well, I think. All right. Has anyone seen the server? Oh, okay. I expect Thomas to have, but yes, pretty much as I expected. If the client is rare, the server is a legend. So, you know, why do people still use NFS v4? Well, it's basically Linux to Linux, and this is really the most important use these days. You know, there are lots of other legacy Unixes, there's FreeBSD, etc., but Linux to Linux really is where NFS is used the most. And it's because it's not exact, but it's really designed around POSIX semantics. It's POSIX clients talking to POSIX servers. So you get the advisory locking, you can rename open files, you can unlink open files, etc. Extended attributes and the more modern ACL model are nailed on, not so much. There are, which are kind of modifications which were made for Windows clients, they're not great. So how do we use SMB in the places that people right now want to use NFS v4 Linux to Linux? And of course, the obvious answer to that, what I'm going to talk about, is the SMB3 Unix extensions. Now, this is something that Tom and I and Steve and whatever, we've been talking about for probably about 3 or 4 years now. Yeah, okay, thank you more than that. Oh, thank you very much. Yes, we've been dithering around this for 5 years. But actually, I'm hoping that we're now at a point where implementation, we can actually start implementing. I'll explain some of the reasons why it was difficult in this talk. But in some ways, I think it's a good thing we didn't just start cranking out the extensions when we were first talking about it, because I think we would have made a terrible mistake. And I'm going to explain why. So SMB3 is really close for Linux to Linux. It just needs a little push in the right direction. And so what we need to do is to add POSIX semantics to SMB3. So how can we do that? Well, we have a history of having Linux to Linux Unix extensions. So how many people have actually used those, by the way? Yeah, I thought so. I mean, they are, strangely enough, they are quite widely used, even in just Linux environments, mainly because people tend to set up Samba servers because they have to use Windows. And once you have a working Samba server, it's kind of easier to just add your Linux client to that than set up a parallel NFS server and maintain two servers. And so even in pure Linux environments, the Linux Unix extensions in the Linux client do tend to see quite a bit of use. So they were originally created by SCO, and that was the SCO before they went crazy. That was sort of the old SCO, and HP for their servers and clients. And what they originally did was they found a bunch of info levels. They carved out a bunch of info level space that Microsoft didn't seem to be using at the time. I don't think there was much coordination. And essentially said, okay, well, we'll add some POSIX semantics for the things that we need, and we'll just stick them in and use those. And later, Samba extended them so that we have complete POSIX path names, you know, complete with slashes, etc. We added transport level encryption badly, but I'll go into that in a little while. We added info levels for POSIX ACLs. We added symlinks. And, of course, all of the POSIX behaviors. So running Linux to Samba, you actually get, I would say, a good 99% of working POSIX. So I think Steve runs the POSIX conformance tests and XFS tests with his client against Samba servers quite regularly. There are a few things that we fail, but mostly we just work and we provide absolutely complete POSIX semantics. So we're done, right? We just, you know, put those in SMB3 and we're done. Well, not quite. I do love that old advert because it actually describes the Unix extensions quite well in that they are horrible mutations. So how does it work? Well, you start out by doing your standard SMB1, and this is SMB1 only, of course, negotiate. And the server says, hey, I can do Unix capabilities. Then you do a tree connect, And then the evil starts. You do a set file system info request saying, I would like these specific POSIX capabilities, and the server replies saying, yeah, okay, I'll support these, or maybe some subset of what you asked for. And then at that point, everything changes from client to server. You start using POSIX path names, you get Unix, you get POSIX-specific replies. So some of the things are reused, file handles, etc., some of the operations are reused, but the semantics are completely different globally. So what did Tridge think about it? He thought it was the worst hack job he'd ever seen in his life. As I said to him, don't hold back, Tridge. Using setfs info to set global state on the server makes me want to vomit, were his comments on it. And looking back on it, you know, it's hard to disagree, really. Apple, after being inspired by the original SMB1 Unix extensions, they ended up doing the same thing. There was a set of macOS extensions to SMB1 created by Thursby with their Dave client. But the really biggest, ugliest problem is the global state. So you negotiate these Unix extensions using setfs info, and after that, everything on the server changes. That basically, you're talking to a complete different animal. And this, you know, it makes things really ugly from a protocol point of view. And if you're looking at it from Wireshark, things that had previous meanings with a Windows connection now mean something different. And it's ugly. So what are the really ugly things? Well, symlinks. That's, you know, Windows ACLs I was complaining about in the NFS. Symlinks with Unix extensions are a disaster zone. We had the latest security issue with symlinks recently. And the reason for this is it's historical, and it's not something we can really change in Samba, is that Samba was originally written for Windows clients, and Windows clients were completely ignorant of symlinks. So we want symlinks to be completely transparent to a Windows client. One of the things that people loved about early Samba was that they could move chunks of data around and just stick a symlink in, everything would keep working, Windows clients would keep working, they wouldn't have to change any path names on any apps or anything. So you really want Windows clients to follow symlinks. But POSIX clients must never follow symlinks. And so what essentially you have is two code paths through the server, and we're always screwing that up. The most recent one was the fact that we were doing an LSTAT, which is non-following symlink, on getting user and group credentials, and then mixing that up with a stat call getting the Windows ACLs, and the things were being merged together, with the result that if you had a modified client that read file ownership using a Unix extensions call and then wrote it back using a Windows call, you could actually change the ownership of the file. Things like this. Transport level security was poorly designed. I designed it, so I can say that. And then I can blame Steve for not implementing it in time to show me that it was poorly designed. So, yes, great. I can always find a way to blame you, Steve. Never mind. But no, I made a mess of that. I'm not a crypto expert. But the great thing with SMB3, of course, is that it was designed by crypto experts, and they've done a decent job. And so that's one thing we no longer have to worry about. The other thing we swept under the rug, we've gotten away with it for a long time, mostly because Unix apps don't really use EAs very much, and that is extended attributes. They don't really match. Windows extended attributes are case insensitive. They have namespace restrictions that Linux to Linux ones really don't have. And so we should probably do with redesigning those. And then the other thing is, of course, only Samba implemented the Unix extensions. This may be the same with SMB3, but I still want to do a much cleaner and nicer job. So, you know, we've shaken our Etch-a-Sketch, and we have a nice clean slate to work on. So how should we do it if we're going to do it right? And this is why I'm kind of glad we didn't start whacking out code back when we first started talking about this 5 years ago, because we probably would have made the same mistakes. And it was only after a matter of time and talking about it with Metz and some Microsoft engineers and others that I've come to a different way of thinking about the problem. So SMB3 is completely handle-based. And the only path name you've got, well, I suppose rename as well, but you use create to map a path name into a handle. And then every other operation is handle-based. So the nice thing about that is you can collect all the semantics that you need for the differences between POSIX and Windows onto one place, which is the handle that you get back from a create. And you use handles for every single operation, delete, rename, blocking, EAs, you name it. All the areas where you need differences are collected into one nice abstraction. So, the other thing, as Tom mentioned in his earlier talk, is you have mechanisms to extend create operations in SMB3. You have create contexts, which are basically blobs of data that you can attach to create. And the wonderful thing about those is, for Windows servers and everyone else, if a server doesn't recognize a create context, with some slight exception, which I think we discussed with Brian a long time ago, if a server doesn't understand a create context, it completely ignores it. So, I'm just showing an example, time warp, and there are two kinds of create contexts. The original create context that are sort of like four-character ASCII names. These days, they're gone to using a GUID instead, because they're just blobs. You can have them any size you want, really. So we could either use POSX, which probably more likely just invent ourselves a GUID, and say that is the OpenMIA POSIX handle GUID. And at that point, if the server responds with a matching create context reply, then we know that the handle that we've opened has POSIX semantics. So originally, as I mentioned, SMB1 had this POSIX capability bit that allowed clients to say, well, I want POSIX rename, but not POSIX case sensitivity, or I want POSIX locking, but not POSIX delete and close. I think that's a terrible idea. I really don't want to do it that way. I would just rather say, these are POSIX semantics. If you're doing this, you support all of them. None of this sort of clients have asked for this, server will respond with that. You either get all of them or none. Because, to be honest, trying to test all the code paths through a server that says, okay, well, this POSIX handle has locking but not rename, it's a losing proposition. We shouldn't do that. So how will we negotiate them? We could use there's a capability bit. We could reuse that capability bit in the negprot. But there's actually a better way, which is the latest SMB3 has has negotiate contexts a bit like create context, which are attached to the SMB3 negprot. Problem is, they're not a GUID. I think that's a missed opportunity there. If only those things had been a GUID, we could have added a POSIX GUID and done the negotiation there. They're actually a 16-bit field, so we would still have to ask for a specific number to say this is a POSIX extension, POSIX capability extension.
But then we would miss the SMB2.0 and friends.
So Michael's comment is we would miss SMB2.friends. I don't care about SMB2. From where I'm sitting, SMB2 is a legacy protocol. SMB3 and beyond. We support it. That's what we should do moving forward. That's what we should define going forward. I don't want to try and retrofit this into earlier versions of the protocol. Just say it's the latest version that we support and onwards does POSIX. But the other thing is, do we need this negotiation? Because if we're doing it on create context anyway, then And the server ignores them if they don't know. Why does the client even need to know at negotiate time if the server will do Unix extensions? You can just send it with your very first create. Well, exactly. As Tom says, you would open the root of the file system, and if that thing had a POSIX create context, then, and the server responds, you know that the server will do it.
Because you know that it... Here's the reason. It's not really a server property. It's a share property.
Ah, that's, right? As Tom says, a good point. It is a share property, not a server property.
There's a server element to it, but it's really linked to the share. Do I have a POSIX-style share or a non-POSIX-style?
That's doing more global state than I would like to have. So the comment is FAT file systems shouldn't allow POSIX. I'm not so sure about that. There are many different file systems that you can have. Some of them it makes sense, some of them not. Yeah, and Alexander.
Which means that you would need to have authentication context which is not related to the user that tries to authenticate it. Think about the mount coins without having cross credentials.
I think you're confused there. It's nothing to do with mount points. It's nothing to do with session setup. This is after all that is done. You have an authenticated user connection before you start adding these create context. Theoretically you could do it on an anonymous connection. But the thing about this is the server can decide per create. So if you do a create and the file system happens to be FAT, you could disallow it. But the nice thing is, if you do this not per share, imagine if you have a file system where the root of it is FAT and then an EXT4 mounted below opens on the FAT part of the file system, could disallow POSIX, but when you traverse down into the lower level, which is EXT4, then you would allow POSIX. That's why it's worthwhile doing per handle, not per share. Yep. I do. Oh, absolutely. That's the whole point of it, is to do it per handle. Sorry, I hadn't got that yet. I was too busy going to slag off Apple for doing it the wrong way. you should wait. I'm getting there. So Apple did something very similar to what Tom suggested, which is to create this AAPL create context. But it's horrible. It's disgusting. They open essentially the blank name. With this AAPL create context. And again, it reproduces the sins of the old SMB1 extensions in that flips the server into a different state. And it's done per share. And that's awful. We don't want to do that. I just don't like that. I don't think it's a very clean design. So, how would I like to do it? No protocol negotiation, or, you know, minimal if we have to do it at all. No negotiation of features at create time, all POSIX or no POSIX, and we do it per create context. You add the POSIX thing in a create context, you get POSIX semantics. So an earlier idea was, well, we could use UTF-8 names in a separate create context. No, don't want to do that. Just use UCS2 Windows existing parsing. Let's keep it simple. Everybody has to do that. The only thing is we don't have alternate data stream names because POSIX doesn't support alternate data streams and probably won't. So if that create context gets returned on a handle, you get all POSIX semantics or not. Yes, Simo. So the question is, right now we don't have rich ACLs, maybe they'll become common. I do get to that in a later part of the slides. My feeling is that is better handled by a specific info level, because we have to keep the POSIX ACLs info levels around. Yes, Ira.
Just a question you made sort of later. History shows the POSIX extensions in general that they evolve.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you said, well, we get all of it, but all of it's meaning a changeover time.
So the comment is POSIX evolves, how are we going to keep up to date? So my feeling at least is for some of the basic things like interaction, reads and writes interaction with locks, unlinked semantics, EAs, they are pretty much frozen, they're not going to change. So what I would say is right now we standardize on what are commonly understood to be POSIX semantics. If those things change in the future, then we revisit it. We may use a different POSIX create context. Once we've set the semantics associated with the create context, they should stay frozen with that context. If you want to rev the protocol, have a new create context that has a slightly different meaning.
That's what SMB3 does today.
Yes.
For instance, the durable and durable.
Exactly. Durable. Yeah. Yeah.
Don't rev it.
Don't change the meaning of stuff, yeah, that you've already done.
Yep.
Yes. So it's all operations become POSIX on that handle. So what are the current ones? So right now we already have most of the semantics inside Samba. Probably, most of them, not the EAs. But so we ignore the POSIX locks. We don't ignore Windows locks. Windows locks are treated as mandatory. POSIX locks are treated as advisory. Lock requests on the handle become an advisory lock. You can unlink and rename open handles only if there are. And so this is where, once we've decided on this, we need to write out an RFC, basically, similar to the existing Microsoft SMB2 docs, as an extension that essentially describe what the semantics of this new create context would be. FSA doc, thank you.
Right, not the protocol, but the file system.
Yeah, the file system semantics doc, yeah. The other thing is directory listings return POSIX namespace. So this is where I do need some help from Microsoft, because what Apple did, which, I really hate, is once you've negotiated this AAPL create context, then directory list, the meaning of info levels change, and I really don't want to do that. So what would be nice is if we could have some info levels from the query handle info that map to the existing POSIX ones that we have. Right now, I'm guessing we need about 3 or 4. I need to sit down with Steve and go through very carefully. The problem is the SMB3 spec as is only has a 1-byte field for those info levels. So this is what I was hoping to do was to be able to use the existing space, but it don't fit. And so I can't trample on the existing info levels. So let's see, what else? Sure, but it has to be. I can't just pick arbitrary numbers and use them. I have to coordinate. Yes, no, I'm not. That's what I'm. That's why I'm not coding yet. Yes, yeah. Yeah, but in the future, if you're ever going to do a future revision of the protocol,
yeah, you need a mechanism to extend.
It might be better to widen that field in some way if we can. So the get and set of EAs should use the Unix, not Windows namespace. And I think we should expose the full Linux EA space because, and this is what was pointed out to me, and this is why we're eventually going to have to solve the symlink problem properly as well, is that SE Linux needs the system namespace, and it also needs to be able to set and get ACLs and EAs on symlinks. So I really do want to be able to support. I'm happy not supporting these things on symlinks to start with, but having in the protocol spec saying that servers should support these things on symlinks, but some implementations may not. What's the correct way? So servers may implement these on symlinks, because to be honest, Solaris servers do not support extended attributes or ACLs on symlinks. So we have to be able to have enough flexibility to allow for Illumos servers or whatever that are running Samba to do the same thing. So yes, as I say, symlinks are a problem. So How do we create them? And we need to return a handle op. Right now, that simply won't work because I disallow all opens on symlinks. And what should we do with the ANACLs? I've already mentioned that Illumos is different from Linux. FreeBSD and Linux are easy. They both support EAs and ACLs on symlinks. Some of the other older Unixes don't. Excuse me. Yes? The question is, what does ZFS on Linux do? I don't know. I've never actually run it. So it would be violate the other than violating the license, yes. I'm not sure. We'd have to look at it. But I'm guessing that it will not allow, because it's built into the file system, it would not allow EAs or ACLs on symlinks. Chris?
Negotiability somewhere to say, yes, I support this, but not this part, and having a whole part, whole set.
So Chris wants to negotiate? No. The operation will fail with an error, is the best way to do it. Or have the operation fail with an error. Yes, I wanted to set an ACL on a symlink? No. That's the best way to do it. That will be written to the spec. That will be written to the spec that once you've turned this on, these are the things you must support, these are the things that are optional. And this actual list of optional things are quite short. So, yeah. The other possibility is, because we've got a bigger space there, is to add FSCTL calls. Yeah, not so great. The other thing is Windows lock ranges are unsigned, POSIX are signed. I don't want to change the semantics of Windows lock ranges, so I think I'm going to make Steve's client do the calculations for signed into unsigned before sending them on the wire. So, let's see. Richard and Volker already did some prototypes of this. The code never got in because I started screaming and shouting because there was something in there that was my fault that I had to fix before we could get rid of it. And that is this global state feature. And I was incredibly lazy, like most engineers. And what would happen is because I knew that once POSIX was negotiated, I had global POSIX state, I literally had a global variable that said, am I in POSIX mode or not? And I took all sorts of horrible shortcuts at all levels of the stack, both in the protocol parsing and below the VFS to say, well, this is a POSIX name, and I know because that global variable says so. So I had to rip that out, and I finally got rid of it in March of this year. And that was this whole host of commits, if anyone was watching, that got rid of the LP POSIX path name. It still remains in a couple of places, but only in the SMB1 code path. So right now, there is a POSIX flag on a handle. Actually, that is a bit vector of different operations, but I have to have that for Ralph to support his hideous AAPL fruit thing. But for the SMB3 Unix extensions, that will just be a POSIX mode on. And that is now the only required state, is that flag on the handle that specifies POSIX semantics. Yes, Simo. Thank you. So the question is, yes, it's very nice. It's now up a handle flag, but now you can have a client that opens a POSIX handle and a Windows handle. How do they interact? We already have that problem, and we already have to solve that problem. So all I'm going to do is I'm going to write down the semantics of the things that we already do and say that's what you have to do, because I'm still lazy. So we already have that problem because we can have Windows clients and Linux clients accessing the same file at the same time. And we already have a set of rules that say Windows locks are mandatory, POSIX locks are advisory. You can't unlink a file that has a Windows open on it, et cetera, et cetera. So it's just going to mean we have to solve that problem. We've already solved that problem. So essentially all it means is the client could choose, I want a Windows open or a POSIX open on the same connection, whereas previously they'd have to have different connections. But mostly all this stuff is done to actually tidy this up in the server. Like I say, the ACL problem, which I think you already mentioned. Natively, SMB3 wants Windows ACLs, which is similar but not quite to NFSv4. We have modules that do that already. Currently, we use and we must maintain, even for SMB3, the draft POSIX ACL spec, because that's in Linux. It's very widely used. People know how to use it. They expect to do set FACL on files over an SMB3 mount. So that's a matter of basically getting set info levels. The nice thing about that is you don't have to have them in the create context for them to be atomic, because that's not how they work anyway. So this is the bit that I'm unsure of. If we add a new ACL model into Linux, at that point, we may need new info levels to do get and set on these new ACL models. And what happens if someone creates a new one? This is the part that I haven't finished thinking about yet. You just have to try it. You would try the info level. You can guarantee that you have Windows ACLs. So you could always map everything to Windows ACLs. Steve, are you paying attention? I could blind you with a laser. So we're talking about potential ACL models here. So you should chip in. The issue is right now, we obviously have to have Windows. We have to have the existing draft POSIX. How do we cope with extending for new ACL models?
Well, first of all, all of this pales in comparison with mode.
Ah, we're not even going to mode. Thank you. Right. We'll talk about this offline. I'm not even going there. Mode is less of a problem than this. So anyway, we do... Thank you. That will get fixed once we have the Unix info levels in SMB3. So the issue is we need. Oh, sorry.
I just have a quick question. How
yes.
do you find out locally whether rich ACLs are available?
Well, again, you have to make the call and see if the file right. system returns
so
enosys.
So you have the same API local as remote.
Yes,
you do the
pretty
same
much.
Damn thing either way.
Yes, if you have a rich ACL-enabled application that makes a local file system call on a kernel that's compiled without them, you would just get enosys.
And if you want rich ACLs to map to SMB ACL?
Well, so we're not sure whether we want them to map or whether we want them pristine yet, but we will decide this later. This is an outstanding point of contention, which I only have about 5 minutes, so I'm not going to cover. Okay. So how are we going to do this? First of all, we're going to finish arguing amongst ourselves about how we should do it. And then it's actually fairly easy. We have a complete SMB1, SMB2.3 client library. We already have calls that are used by the GNOME VFS to call into POSIX semantics. And so we can prototype this stuff really rapidly. None of this stuff will go into actual shipping Samba, until we have a spec written down that, you know, we've submitted at least for other people's consideration, and we have some closure on the things like what ACL models do we want, how do we negotiate them, or just return enosys, whatever. And then we argue with Steve about what he wants to do. So we're going to be able to avoid the mistakes that we've already made there. I'm sure we will make some new ones. But hopefully it'll be a cleaner implementation, a more correct implementation, and you know less. We'll have less of the issues that we had with the horrible hack job that was the Unix version 1 extensions. What if we use the same API to libsmb client? Then the GNOME VFS will just use it natively, and they won't even. So right now, if you upgrade to SMB2 on your SMB2 only on your server, the GNOME VFS, some operations start failing and they have to fall back. So it would be nice to fix that so that the POSIX calls that they make just map through directly. Because a lot of people use the GNOME VFS. So the question is, it would be like nice to expose a proper library. That's another issue. right now, libsmb client is the public API we to commit to, and we can rev that a little and add some more, but I don't want to get into our library issue right now. And then, of course, there's the BSD of the Month Club and Solaris. BSDs shouldn't be so bad because it's somewhat similar to Linux. These are really the only Unixes, I think, that matter anymore. Solaris, again, that's why we're going to have some of these fallbacks, because they simply don't support some of the semantics that we're going to need. And in fact, probably in the first implementation, it may be that we don't support symlinks correctly. And so even though we spec that this is what you should do, the first implementation might not be complete. Yes, Steve.
And if you step back 10,000 feet, as bad as symlink emulation is, Apple dealt with it for a long time on the Saturn, and they satisfied with bad symlink emulation as opposed to Security Vault.
True. That is a very good point, Steve. So as Steve pointed out, having bad symlink emulation using magic files is a lot better than compromising server security, which we have done many times in the past of this problem. So how would I what would I consider a success? If we roll this out, it seems to work, everybody likes it. What's the definition of success? And I'm sorry, good old Penguin Computer, I just love that. I just love the picture they did for that. So long term, it would be a success if our friends up in Microsoft in Redmond were supporting the POSIX extensions on Windows. And now that there's the POSIX subsystem on Windows, the Linux subsystem, you know, obviously it would depend on market demand for having Linux clients in the Azure cloud talking to Windows server, running that kind of thing. And I know, because I know that the Azure SMB3 server is new. I would imagine that the SMB3 server in regular Windows is getting to the point where there's areas that people don't want to mess with anymore. I know there's certainly areas in Samba that people don't like changing. So it might be easier to target the SMB3 Azure file server. Anyway, that's my definition of success, is, you know, if it's...
Totally agree. We should definitely have a conversation.
If it's good enough.
Be at the Plugfest next month.
Great. Yes, I would love to chat about it. And I would love to hear his input on our proposed design and how he would handle some of the issues that we're going to have to go to. So even though it's been 5 years and probably still a little longer, it's worth spending this time to design it right to the point where people don't look at it and say, this makes me want to vomit, and I'm never going to implement it. So the success means more implementations than just Samba. So let's not repeat the mistakes of the past. So slides available at wherever they're going to be. So given that, do we have any other questions that people haven't thrown bricks at me already? Yes, Simo, thank you.
Also, NFSv4 ACK was given that if you try, it works.
So the comment about NFSv4 ACKLs, NFSv4 ACKLs are of the same, as far as I can see, they are the same as rich ACKLs. So we may be able to kill two birds with one stone there. But I agree, the possibility of extending ACKL models, we may ultimately solve this by creating a new info level with a defined set of ACKL types and a defined marshalling on the wire for get and set, and essentially having a 16-bit field. You know, 16-bit should be enough ACKL types for anybody, and have the client just try and send what they want and get enosys back if that's what they get.
Yeah, I think it's important the terminology here. You know, we talked to Bruce Fields or you talked to the NFS guys, they were violently against dealing with anything having to do with NFS4 ACKLs because they corrected the spec in 4.1. So when they talk about NFS, they're always talking about NFS 4.1. Even though they had tools, mm-hmm. they've been waiting for 5 years for Rich ACKLs too, because they don't want to touch their NFS 4 tools.
Right.
Rich ACKL to them is NFS 4.1.
Okay.
Other than the SID, the UID to username problem.
So that means that, I mean, we have calls that get and set Windows ACKLs natively in SMB3. So right now, we have only two extra ACKL types that we know of, which are the POSIX draft ACKLs and the rich ACKLs / NFSv4.1 ACKLs. So if I would rather... Oh, thank you, Volker AF. I think they can keep... AFS ACKLs can be kept as an out-of-tree patch. So, yeah, it would be nice not to have to build an extension mechanism into, what flavor of ACLs would you like, sir? I would really like to cut this down and at least bound the problem. Yes, Tom.
We have this sleeping kitten called the SMB2 Unix extensions that we have never had to wake up. Do you think we need it today?
Do we need it today? Probably this year, not today. I'm hoping by the end of the year, after we've had discussions on Summer Technical with Microsoft, I'll try and drag the Apple guys in.
I guess the question comes down to who other than Samba will be interested here, and can we achieve consensus without triggering that process? Then, you know, the process is primarily around IP. Maybe we should talk that about that separately, but consensus drives the willingness to go there.
Yes.
You don't have to answer today.
Apple have their AAPL thing. I would guess that they're going
to
want
to they could change it if they wanted.
But it would mean a boatload of work that they don't want to fund, I think.
It's there. She's still curled up in her corner.
That's a possibility. I'd rather finish nailing down these thorny issues to the point where at least we have a spec that everybody says, yes, I hate that, you know, but I don't hate it more than I can bear. You know, everybody's going to hate it, but yeah.
I mean, the only server implementation I could imagine might have an interest is Isilon, I guess, because I mean, they still have the interop story with NFS and so on. I mean, NetApp doesn't really have an interop story, so Isilon might be interested, but that's the only ones I could.
Well, if they are,
they have their own server. Miss Dina Fine and her friends. Yeah, maybe.
Chris, if you want to bring in anyone at Dell or who you think might be interested, you know, we can have preliminary discussions, you know. But I do want to keep to these core things. Handle-based, as little or no negotiation as we can possibly get away with, as close to Windows semantics as we can be, so we stray out of Windows semantics as much as we have to, but no further. So I think that's the way we should do it. So, any other questions? Ah, Steve, yeah. There's always Steve.
You know, if you step back and look at, you know, the test stuff, we have one case that fails because of POSIX locking. One. I mean, it's important.
Why? I shouldn't fail.
No.
All the semantics you need.
No. What I mean is that today...
Oh, you mean with SMB3?
With SMB3.
Oh, okay.
So, I mean, it's not like there's lots.
Yeah.
You know, there's a dozen that fail because of weird... F-allocate, a dozen that fail because of permission problems, a few that fail because of lack of X-adders, a few that fail because of POSIX ACLs, but it's not very many. But you know, the POSIX locking is actually not a lot. I mean, there are some that'll fail, but it's not as big as you think. And I guess the two big monsters in the living room, you don't want to talk about mode, but what about the chicken and egg problem we've talked about with case insensitivity versus case sensitivity on interpreting.
When you have a POSIX handle and the server returns your POSIX create context, you have a case sensitive path name parse.
Well, that's fine, but that means that you as a server have to pre-parse the create context before you do the path interpretation.
Yes.
Okay, that's fine. If you'll do that, that's good.
Yes, we do. And it also means that when you do query directory and you get file names back, you may get make file and make file.
Yeah, and that's fine. But I mean, I think you can do today.
On that handle.
But I think you do today already.
Sorry?
POSIX file systems are case sensitive. It's case sensitive, case preserving, and they can choose them any way they like. Many of them are, but not all of them. They don't have to be. NFS has to do this very carefully. It passes that bit in the FS info.
All right, that may be so. That was actually, because we do have those bits separately associated with the tree connects right now in the server. That may be something we have to drill down on. I would prefer not to do that. I know of almost no shipping storage out there that does case preserving, case insensitive POSIX.
DMS.
Yeah. The people who ship that are basically shipping it as Windows file servers and.
But I thought that Mac, if I remember correctly, there's a volume property already, by the way, that says this, right? There's a volume property that some servers lie about, but I thought that the Mac actually honors that flag if they think it's AAPL. So the volume tells you whether it's case sensitive or not, because Mac has this issue, right, where they have case sensitive and case insensitive.
All right. When you ask for POSIX, you get the volume properties that the TCON told you.
Right.
How about that?
Sounds fine with me.
Okay, that works.
Yeah.
Because most of them are going to say we're case sensitive.
And by the way, whether or not you're case sensitive, you can return makefile on makefile. I mean, directory this is directory this.
Yes. What,
which one you actually
break.
Open? Well, good luck.
That's right. The clients break and people get upset. So.
Yeah. I mean, just anyway. Because you open the wrong makefile, I mean. Yeah, it'll be whatever.
It can mix up the inodes, Steve. The client may mix up the inodes. That would be a bad
thing.
Exactly. That would be a bad thing. So
well,
we don't want to do that.
We have that today.
All right. Any other questions? Are we? So we still have some issues, which is why we're not coding yet, thank God, because we would have messed these up, guaranteed it. So.
Okay.
All right. Well, thank you so much. While I'm up here, I'd like to, and I've got the mic, I would like to thank everybody at CERNET who arranged the conference, because I think they've done a fantastic job, and it's been great for hosting us.